The clearing of land in Burnaby was a terrific job. Thousands of great trees were logged off and taken to the old Hastings mill by way of Douglas Road, by ox teams and later by horses, in teams of from 2 to 16 horses, and the teamsters were a colorful lot of men. They had a vocabulary that would singe the hide off any animal. They did not need whips, but they did have them with 50-foot thongs. Another sawmill was situated on Burnaby Lake, known as the Piper's Mill. There was an enormous sawdust pile still at the site of this mill in 1919. I helped to take some of the great timbers used in the structure of this mill to build a small shingled sawmill in 1919 for Simpson and Giberson. This was built at the bottom of Bainbridge Avenue and the lake. About this time, many of the young men were returning from the First World War. And Angus McLean and Percy Little and myself went to work on this mill, working 10 hours a day. All three of us built our own homes from lumber cut from this mill in the Lockdale area on Sherlock Street and Curtis Street and Kitchener Street. It is interesting to note that Angus McLean and Percy Little both became foremen on big government jobs in British Columbia. Percy Little was a foreman on the Portman Bridge, and Angus McLean did government work up the coast during the war. The house where George Green, the ex-councillor who wrote the history of Burnaby, also was the second post office in Lockdale and was housed in his front porch. Burnaby, like several other municipalities, was hard hit by the First World War, and many homes would become vacant as the years dragged on. A very large sawmill had been built at Barnet and became empty and deserted, except for watchmen, owls and rats and bats. There was also a large clock that struck the hours and half hours. One got a most depressed feeling on going through this area, either by night or day, as the years went by. That awful bell tolling out the hours, it seemed to be always calling the workmen back to put the wheels and saws back in motion to fill the place with life. But that mill was not destined to do much more. An attempt was made, but wages were so low that a strike took place, and the economic crack of the 1930s closed it for all time. The big bell did not ring anymore, and the mill was dismantled. For 10 years, all the workers, together with thousands of their dependents, went on government relief. I have borrowed the next chapter from a writer by the name of Grace E. Carpenter, written in the Advertiser of a special settlement of November 1942. It was in 1902 that the logging firm of L.T. Dundas, having logged in an area on Capitol Hill, started operations just west of Spurlin Avenue. There was, of course, neither Hastings Street nor Spurlin Avenue at that time, but just unbroken forest. In 1903, he sold his timber rights there to Herbert Gillie of New Westminster. For the first year or more, Mr. Gillie and his workers cleared the land west of Spurlin Avenue and his skid road running down the ravine north of Hastings Street and Spurlin Avenue. A number of years afterwards, the Noble Power Company had a powder storehouse there, and many of the settlers went there to buy stumping powder to blow stumps for clearing the land. Those who could not afford to buy blasting powder would dig all around a stump. Some of these were 12 feet to 6 feet through and about 4 feet deep, and dig them out and burn them and kept a fire going night and day, sometimes using 1 to 3 cords of firewood to complete the job. Then came the drag saw, with a blade 4 feet to 10 feet long, a very heavy tool to work with. Then stump pullers, with which left one in a worse position than the stump was out of the ground than before. Then came the chainsaw and the bulldozer, and the end came of the drudgery of land clearing. By 1950, clearing land of giant trees and stumps and rocks was no longer a problem. Mechanical power had freed men and women of the back-breaking work of clearing land. From a logging engine that set up halfway up the eastern side of this ravine, the skid road ran straight to a second donkey, almost a mile southward, then to a third engine, which yarded the logs near it, near the Johnson Road in the present Kensington Avenue. Kensington Avenue was first named Amos Avenue, from a settler who was one of the settlers who had a small holding there, about 500 feet from the corner of Broadway and Kensington Avenue, on the east side. The home of Mr. Amos and the family was built of logs and still occupied today, August the 1st, 1955. And just below this is a shack occupied by Mr. Powell, who purchased a piece of property from Mr. Amos, or given to him by Amos, 50 feet wide and 600 feet long. Powell had been a soldier in the war between China and Great Britain many years ago, during the Boxer Rebellion. As a powderman, had done a lot of work in clearing that road in the Lockdale area, Curtis Street, Duthie and Spurlin, and Sherlock, to name a few. At times, he went up coast and worked on the clearing of the right-of-way of the Pacific Great Eastern. Amos left Burnaby about 1925 and went back to England, where he was lost in the bombing of London during the air raids in World War II. About 1920, some oil scouts thought they had discovered oil in Burnaby. They had walked across a water hole that Amos and Powell used. There was oil floating on the surface. They stirred it up a little and more came to the surface. And off they went, and soon an oil rig was grinding away day and night. But what had happened was Powell had left a can of crude oil just above the water hole a day before, and it fell into the water hole and was slowly leaking out. The drillers gave up after a few months and went over to a site near present Spurlin Avenue School and drilled another that produced nothing but a little water.